Welcome to the Listen Lounge, where the sounds of smooth jazz meet the chilling screams of murder. A house in the woods. Laurel and Jeremy Calloway have longed for a new life, away from the chaos and confusion of New York City. Driving along a country road in New Jersey with a young real estate agent in the back seat, they almost miss it. A small house in the woods for sale. Laurel immediately thinks this could be the house for them, the house of their dreams, where a simpler life awaits. Stopping to take a look at the property, they meet the house's caretaker, Eileen, and within a few weeks they find themselves the very lucky owners of their ideal home. But who are the mysterious old couple who'd put the house up for sale, having moved out months ago? Is Eileen more than a friendly neighbor? Who are the townspeople they meet, who all seem aware of the young couple now living in the house in the woods? And is it the house of their dreams, or the house of their nightmares?
A House in the Woods, written by Mark McNeese, narrated by Daniela Accitelli. Part 1. Paradise Found. The loveliest trick of the devil is to persuade you that he does not exist. Charles Baudelaire. Chapter 1. Laurel and Jeremy Calloway had to have the house. They'd first seen it by accident, after taking a wrong turn on one of the back roads that ran like veins throughout Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Their realtor, Scott Dunlop, was in the back seat, directing them toward a home for sale on Lancaster Road, which required taking a left turn off 651, then going a mile or so along Conley Road, a major artery that stretched from one end of the county to the other, then a left turn here, a right turn there, and finally they would be on, should be on, Lancaster. It would have been easy using the car's GPS, but Scott had insisted he knew where the home was. He'd said it was perfect for the young couple and that he could get them there from memory, even though he'd been there only once with another realtor showing the property. Scott was not senior in the office. He was barely junior, having pursued his realtor's license after failing at a previous career in car sales. A friend had told him real estate was easy money. It wasn't.
I think it's up about a half mile, Scott had said, leaning between the seats and peering through the windshield.
You think? Said Jeremy. He hadn't yet reached the point of being annoyed with Scott, but he was getting there.
I know it is, Scott corrected. It's just easy to get disoriented on the roads here.
You mean lost, Laurel said. Lost is okay, Jeremy added, as long as this house is as great as you say it is.
For you two, it's perfect. And there's room to grow if you want a family.
Laurel suddenly liked the man even less. They'd agreed to put off having children, if they ever did, and Laurel resented the cultural assumption that no family was complete without them.
I say we pull over and put the address into the GPS, Laurel had said.
No, we're good, Scott insisted. I know it's coming up. She'd sighed. Why did men refuse to ask for directions? Why did they insist they knew better than a GPS system, if they even consented to using it? She couldn't count the times Jeremy had overruled the GPS lady, as they called the benign, robotic female voice, and instead had gotten them lost. She was about to insist they stop and enter the address when they saw the house. Had she not been looking out the side window at that very moment, they would have driven past it and never discovered their little slice of heaven in the woods.
What's that? Laurel had asked. Jeremy would have missed it if he hadn't looked over when she spoke.
Something unusual happened that day. He listened to his wife. He lowered his head, peered out the window, and stopped the car. The house was obscured by a row of fir trees along Jupiter Road. Somehow they'd twisted and turned themselves into an area that was more woods than residential homes. In summer, the houses would be invisible, concealed from view by the vast greenery of the trees. But it was late April, and leaves had just begun to spread. We can keep going, Scott said. You don't need to stop here. Enchanted by the little house, Laurel hadn't noticed the unease in his tone.
Let's keep moving, please, said Scott. I know we're near the place on Lancaster. It's perfect for you.
I think this one might be, Laurel said, and it's for sale. She pointed at a handmade for sale sign planted between the fir trees and the road.
You're not interested, Scott said. Not at all.
Jeremy put the car in park and turned around in his seat, facing the young realtor in the back.
Excuse me, Scott, but we can decide what we're interested in. Is this a competition thing?
No, there's no realtor on this house. Jeremy looked at the sign. Sure enough, beneath the words for sale, it said, in big black marker, by owner, with a phone number listed. Jeremy recognized the area code as Philadelphia. He'd been looking for work there.
It was only an hour's drive from where they were, and he was hoping for a new professional start in the city of brotherly love.
Laurel said over her shoulder, I thought you didn't know where we were.
Barely audible, Scott replied. I do now.
Jeremy.
Excuse me?
Nothing. Just take my word on this. You don't want to live here.
You're worried about your commission. That's what I think, Laurel said as she reached over and opened the car door. Let's have a look around.
Smiling at Scott, Jeremy said, Yes, let's. Scott leaned back in the seat.
I'll wait here. Nobody's home anyway.
Laurel thought it was a strange thing to say, but she wasn't going to be dissuaded by a young realtor whose only concern was making a sale. They weren't looking for a house for Scott Dunlop to live in. They were looking for a house for themselves, a house they could afford, a house not far from the Delaware River, a house in the woods, just like this one.
I might have a talk about him with Evelyn, Laurel said as they walked toward the front door, leaving a sulking Scott slumped in the back seat. Evelyn was the senior real estate agent at the firm they'd used, Powers and Gatlin, headquartered across the river in New Hope, Pennsylvania. They had several satellite offices dotted around the Delaware River Valley, including one in tiny Strickland, New Jersey, where Scott worked with two other people. The agency had been a referral from Laurel's uncle, Martin Reardon, who lived in Lambertville, a half hour or so from where they were, or where they thought they were. They both felt disoriented this deep into unfamiliar countryside.
Do you really want to get him in trouble? Asked Jeremy. I think he just got his license.
He acts like it, she replied. Maybe I won't say anything. But if he's trying to please a customer, he's going about it in a strange way.
It won't be a sale for him.
Yeah, well, if he keeps pouting, there definitely won't be one, at least not from us.
They'd approached the front of the house, its door protected beneath a wooden carport that looked like it might fall down in a strong gust of wind. The entire house, as viewed from the front, appeared to have been built many years ago and slapped together in pieces. The main portion wasn't much bigger than a cottage, but a side addition had been added, along with a garage. It all matched well enough, but it felt cobbled together as time and money allowed, a mishmash feel Laurel liked very much.
It's not a tract house, that's for sure, Laurel said.
It's either bigger than it looks, said Jeremy, or smaller than it looks.
Weird. Weird and adorable.
They were standing at the front door. A window was to its left, looking into a small, tidy kitchen. Jeremy leaned up to the glass, cupped a hand over his eyes, and peered in.
Stop it, Laurel said. What if somebody sees you?
There's nobody home. It was Scott's voice. The realtor had come up behind them, making so little sound he could have walked to them on air. Laurel swiveled around to him and glanced at his shoes. Too soft-soled for her taste. She didn't like creepy people sneaking up on her, and the young agent was getting creepier by the minute.
You seem familiar with this house, Jeremy said.
It's been empty for a long time, Scott replied. And how do you know this? Asked Laurel. Laurel had opened the screen door and was about to knock when Scott surprised them.
Because I've tried contacting the owner myself. I'm not the only one in the office who's made the attempt, either. We'd all like to sell this place.
Laurel detected a certain distaste in the way he'd said it, as if they wanted to be rid of the house as much as they wanted to sell it.
So you know the owners? She asked. I know of them, but I've only met them in passing, and I've never spoken to them, an elderly couple who'd lived here forever.
Laurel noticed his use of the past tense. Jeremy asked, And you never talked to them?
They stopped coming into town years ago. Who knows why? Too old to drive, maybe. They're not friendly people, from what I'm told.
The more Scott talked, the more he revealed what he'd known before they found themselves lost on Jupiter Road. She turned back to the door and knocked several times.
I told you, no one's home, Jeremy said.
How can you be so sure when you didn't know where we were 10 minutes ago? Scott blushed.
I was lost until we saw the house. I told you. The owners are reclusive and moved away from the area. The agency has had clients before who wanted this house. None of them ever got a reply, and that's all I know. Can we go now?
As Scott had predicted, no one came to the door. Laurel leaned to the side and peered through the kitchen window.
Strange, she thought. It looks clean.
She made a mental note of it. For a house no one lived in, someone took care of it. The lawn was mowed, and the kitchen was well kept. She decided the owners must want it in good shape, just in case they decided to respond to one of those prospective buyers. Would it be Laurel and Jeremy Calloway? She intended to find out.
Let's look around, Laurel said, stepping back and closing the screen door.
She could hear Scott sigh, as if he'd been through this before and was resigned to it.
You can wait in the car if you'd like, Laurel said to him. No, that's okay. I'll come with you. But I'm telling you, this house isn't for you.
How can you be so sure of that, Scott? Asked Jeremy.
Because it's not for anyone.
Laurel chalked up his tone to sour grapes.
It's okay, she told herself.
He'd get used to lost sales and people who knew what they wanted, or he'd give up and find something else to do for a living.
Let's have a look in back, Laurel said.
She walked toward the right side of the house, with Jeremy following close behind. She'd expected another protest from Scott, but instead he said,
Suit yourself, and tagged along.
Chapter 2 It was a small house on a piece of land much larger than they'd guessed. Laurel led them around the corner of the house and was surprised by what appeared to be a half acre of mowed lawn, beyond which lay dense woods. A single, large tree towered over the center of the backyard, and an old well pump sprouted from the ground several yards from it. Who takes care of this place? Jeremy asked. He was suddenly as intrigued as his wife.
I have no idea, Scott said.
He remained behind the Calloways, as if shielding himself with them.
Any idea how much land there is? Asked Laurel. You said your agency tried to get the listing. I don't know exactly. 10, maybe 15 acres?
It must be expensive, said Jeremy.
You'd be surprised. The land in this area isn't worth much. It's too rocky.
Jeremy asked, Do people hunt here? I keep hearing gunshots. I think they're gunshots.
Oh, they're gunshots, Scott said. There's a gun club up the road. Not so lost now? Laurel asked. I'm getting my bearings. I told you, I've been here before, once or twice. We have other properties around here. Speaking of which, we'll be late for the house I'm showing you.
They can wait, said Laurel. She was not about to have her interest or her curiosity derailed by an impatient real estate agent still wet behind the ears. She led them into the backyard so they could turn and see what the view offered. There was a patio with a metal railing and an ancient, long-empty bird feeder on a pole. A rusted table with four chairs occupied most of the paved space, minus chair cushions. A large picture window looked out on the yard. They could see a dark, wood-paneled room inside. "I'm going to take a look," Laurel said. "Be careful," Scott cautioned. "Why? There's nobody home." "I'm just cautious, Mrs. Calloway. Folks around here own guns, and they've been known to use them when a stranger comes onto their property." "I'm about as non-threatening as it gets," said Laurel, raising her hands in mock surrender. "I just want a peek." Jeremy and Scott stayed back while Laurel climbed two small steps onto the patio. She crossed to the window, leaned in, and peered through the glass. "What the hell?" she said, seeing something inside that startled her. Jeremy and Scott quickly joined her on the patio. "There's a cat in there," Jeremy said, seeing what Laurel had seen. A black cat with white paws, sitting serenely in a leather armchair and staring back at them. "How can there be a cat in a house no one lives in?" "The same way the lawn can be mowed," Jeremy said. "The owners must have a caretaker. Maybe the cat belongs to him." "I think we should go now," said Scott. "You can give them a call if you're interested, but I'm telling you, they won't call back. So why have a for sale sign in front?" "Maybe they don't really want to sell it," offered Jeremy. "You know, maybe they're nostalgic. They know they need to get it off their hands, but they can't bring themselves to do it."
"Right," agreed Scott. "They keep the sign out front, but find ways to say no every time a prospective buyer contacts them."
"Must not need the money," Laurel said. "But it's worth a try. Now, let's go. I suppose we owe it to the owners of the other house to actually show up." The three of them walked back around front.
"You never answered my question," Jeremy said to Scott. "Do people hunt around here?"
"It's the woods," Scott replied. "Of course they hunt. But you've seen the no hunting signs everywhere. It's all private land, so yes and no. People hunt, but it's not like you're going to get shot in your backyard."
Laurel had seen the bright orange signs nailed to trees along the road. They all said the same things, declaring the land as semi-wild and prohibiting hunting. When they got back to their Ford Focus, the one Jeremy purchased when his father's death brought them the windfall that made this move possible, Laurel decided to leave a note.
"I'll be right back,"
she said, reaching into the glove compartment and taking out a notebook and pen they kept there. "I want to leave a message."
"They won't see it," Scott said. "They're in Philadelphia, as far as anyone knows."
"Somebody comes here," said Laurel. "That cat would be a skeleton if they didn't. Just get in the car. I'll be right back."
Jeremy shrugged. He knew there was no stopping Laurel once she got an idea in her head. He wasn't that impressed with the house and had no reason to be. All they'd seen was the outside, and not much of that. He got into the driver's seat and fastened his seatbelt. Scott climbed into the back. Laurel heard the car start behind her. She hurried to the front door. Holding the pen at an angle so the ink would flow, she pressed the notepad against the doorframe and started to write. Just their names, phone number, and a request to call about selling. She was tucking the note into the screen door when she found herself being stared at from inside the house.
"May I help you?"
A short, thin, smiling woman stood in the doorway, holding the door open as Laurel tried to hide her surprise. The woman had gray hair tied back in a ponytail. Exposing a kind face with a ready smile, she offered to the stranger outside. Her eyes were grayish blue, and she looked to be in her 60s. She wore a simple yellow dress with a loose, buttoned-down beige sweater cascading over her body.
"Who are you?" said Laurel.
knowing instantly it was the woman's question to ask, not hers. "My name's Eileen Granger," replied the woman. "I look after this place. Well, me and Pete, my husband. I thought no one was home." "No one was," said the woman, laughing. "I was taking my afternoon walk and saw your car parked on the road. Figured you were looking around. You wouldn't be the first." Laurel was disarmed by the woman's mild exuberance. There was something very inviting about her.
"So, the cat's yours?" asked Laurel. "Old Willie? Let's just say he's on loan. He lives here all the time, and I visit him every day. You've heard of hermit crabs? Well, he's a hermit cat. Some days he likes company, some days he doesn't care if I'm here or not. Now, who did you say you were?"
"Oh, sorry," said Laurel. "My name's Laurel Calloway. My husband, Jeremy, and I got lost, sort of, on our way to look at a house for sale with a real estate agent, Scott. They're in the car. We saw the for sale sign by the road and thought we'd check it out."
The woman looked at her a moment, then said,
"Would you like to?"
"Like to what?"
"Check it out."
That smile again, as welcoming a smile as Laurel had seen. Some people would not react kindly to strangers touring their property unannounced. She knew it was not this woman's house and land, but it might as well be, considering which of them was inside at the moment. Tempting Laurel further, Eileen stepped aside and opened the door wider. As if arriving on a whisper, Willie the cat showed up at Eileen's feet, staring up at the person in the doorway.
"You know, I'd like that very much," said Laurel. "Just let me get the others."
"Good," said Eileen. "I can use the company, and this old house can use more people in it. It's been a while. You go ahead and get your friends."
"My husband."
"Right, your husband and the real estate fellow. I'll make some coffee."
Laurel could not believe her good luck. She closed the screen door and hurried back to the car, while Eileen headed inside, leaving the main door open with Willie the cat peering through the screen at the outside world. Jeremy leaned over and opened the passenger door for Laurel. Rushing up to the car, she put her head inside and said,
"Let's go. There's somebody here and she's invited us in."
She could hear Scott sigh from the back seat.
"But the other homeowners..."
"They can wait a few more minutes," Laurel said to him.
"Listen, if we get this house, we'll give you a finder's fee or something. I promise."
That seemed to placate him to a small degree.
"Who is this person inside?" Scott asked as he got out of the car.
"Her name's Eileen," Laurel said, "and the cat's name is Willie."
She saw Jeremy shrug at Scott.
"Oh, well, what can I say?"
Together, they went back to the house, just as Eileen met them at the door. Holding it open for what, Laurel guessed, were the first visitors the little house in the woods had seen in a long time. Chapter 3 Laurel had decided before returning to the car to ignore Scott's frustration. She knew he would be disappointed with the loss of a potential sale, and she didn't care. Moving from New York City was a monumental life change for the Calloways. It was not her problem if a real estate agent got angry that things didn't go his way. Scott had stared at his watch as if he could will them to leave. He'd climbed out of the car, hemming and hawing, making his displeasure obvious. "Who is this woman?" he'd asked, letting the seat slam back into place after hoisting himself onto the road.
"She's the caretaker," Laurel replied. "She and her husband look after the place."
Jeremy had resigned himself to doing as Laurel wanted, but he was perturbed. Less interested in the house and what little they'd seen of it, he knew it was best to defer to his wife. They'd had a few rough patches lately, not the least because of their disenchantment with New York and the unspoken sense of failure it gave to their lives.
When you think about it, somebody has to take care of the property, said Laurel. Otherwise, it would be overgrown by now and in terrible condition. Scott asked, Is that her cat we saw through the window? Yes and no, said Laurel. She made it sound like the cat owned her, which is pretty typical of people with cats. We won't stay long, I promise. The owners of the other house won't be happy, Scott said. Then they can sell it to someone else, Laurel snapped. Now, please, let's just visit a little here and get a better idea if this is the house for us. I told you, they won't respond to you. Scott had slipped into brooding. They don't respond to anyone. I'm not sure they're even still alive. That's silly, Laurel said. They're just picky. Maybe Eileen can tell us why. The three of them got back to the house just as the sound of a tea kettle split the air, its whistle gliding through the screen door. Before they could reach it, Eileen was back in the doorway, holding it open for them. Please, come in, she said. I'm so delighted to have company. Leading them into the house, Laurel introduced the others. This is my husband, Jeremy, and this is Scott Dunlop, a real estate agent from Strickland. The big city, Eileen said, winking at an unamused Scott. Strickland was the closest town, 6 or 7 miles away, depending on how far off course they'd gone. Hurrying to turn off the tea kettle, Eileen said, Have a seat and I'll make us some coffee. I hope instant's all right. I'll pass, Scott said, yanking out a kitchen chair and sitting. I'd love some, said Laurel. Milk with mine, if you have it, Jeremy added. Like Laurel, he'd been immediately charmed by the woman. She wasn't just harmless, she was helpful. She seemed genuinely happy to have visitors, even if it wasn't her house, and she'd welcomed them in without a second thought. Soon, they were all seated at the table while Eileen finished making 3 cups of coffee. Are you sure I can't get you something, Scott? She asked from the stove. No, he said, leaving out the thank you. He jumped at the sound of hissing. Willie had come into the kitchen, perched in front of him, and made his judgment of the irritable young man. The others he could tolerate. This one he hissed at. He likes you, Laurel said facetiously, smiling at Scott. He did not smile back. Eileen made a fourth at the small table, chatting with them across a set of cast-iron roosters that formed a centerpiece. Scott kept himself out of the conversation, asking no questions and offering no conversation. He glanced at his watch so many times the others collectively ignored it. "I've known the Dempseys for 40 years," Eileen explained, referring to the owners of the house. Helen and Jack are the nicest people you could meet, and they've got deeper roots in this area than just about anyone else you'll find. She had explained to them that Helen and Jack Dempsey were now elderly and had never had children, putting them in the position in which so many aging people found themselves, getting old with no one to look after them properly. Neighbors were reliable and a good resource, but nothing like family. They only have themselves, really, Eileen said, and they just thought it was time to live in a more tight-knit community. Strickland's tight-knit, Scott said, surprising them. It was the first time he'd spoken since Eileen had joined them at the table. Yes, it is, replied Eileen, but look at the distances. It's 6 miles into town from here. Me and Pete are a half mile up the road. If Jack needed something or Helen took a fall, no one's going to hear you calling for help. Isn't there a hospital nearby? Asked Jeremy. Eileen almost laughed. The closest hospital is in Flemington, 30 minutes from here. You could die waiting for an ambulance. So, no. I can't say I blame them for moving to Philadelphia. They need to feel secure. Exactly how old are the Dempseys? Laurel asked. She'd finished half her coffee and was sipping the rest, wanting to take her time. She had forgotten about the house they were supposed to see and had no intention of pursuing it. Eileen looked at her, thinking about the question.
You know, I can't really say, but I'd guess Helen is in her 80s and Jack's probably a few years older than she is.
How come they can't sell the house? Scott asked. Laurel noticed something challenging in his tone. Eileen looked at him, and for the first time her smile faded. It was as if the friendly neighbor had suddenly decided she didn't like this man.
Oh, they can sell it, Eileen said. They just haven't found the right buyer.
Then, her smile returning as quickly as it had faded, she turned to Laurel and said, That might have changed today. Laurel was surprised. They'd been at the table with Eileen barely 20 minutes, and now she was suggesting the Callaways might finally be the right people for the house?
Really? Asked Laurel, trying to control her excitement. You think they'll talk to us?
I'd bet just about $1 million on it, if I had $1 million, Eileen replied with a laugh and a wink. Now, let's take a little tour. If I'm going to put a word in for you, and I am, you might as well know what you're getting into. It's a charming house, but it's old and it's got its quirks, just like people.
I'm assuming the other viewing is off, Scott said, slumped into his chair. I should call them.
Please do, Laurel answered cheerfully. Tell them we're sorry for any inconvenience, but we found another property, that sort of thing. Scott took his cell phone and headed outside.
Go ahead and see the house, he said, stepping through the screen door. I've got some calls to make.
You don't want to see the place? Asked Jeremy, getting up from the table with the others.
I've seen enough. Thanks.
Scott let the screen door close behind him as he began talking into his phone.
Come, said Eileen. We'll start with the basement. Willie loves it down there. He can catch a mouse or two.
You have mice? Asked Jeremy. Being from the city, he had little exposure to the diversity of life forms found outside Manhattan. For him, nature meant a walk along the carefully manicured pathways of Central Park. Eileen looked at him.
It's the country, Jeremy. Mice are the least of it, she chuckled, and led them down a set of stairs into the basement.
Enjoy 3-chapter samples of all my audiobooks. Just go to markmcneese.com/listenlounge. You can listen to the entire audiobooks by finding them at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, various other audiobook retailers, or directly from my website,